Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today.
The emotional narrative is the driver of society today, not principle, not right and wrong, not even law, emotion. And Jack Kevorkian caught that, and he ran with it.
Social conservatives in this country are with one voice saying, Israel today, Israel tomorrow, and Israel forever.
The church has taught for millennia that these promises made to Israel really had their ultimate fulfillment in Christ.
I jokingly called this the Issues Etc. Revolution, the near complete sweeping out of the old guard that emphasized church growth practices and contemporary worship styles down the line.
Well, Catholic Charities accounts for 20-25% of adoptions in the United States. That's a remarkable figure if you consider the fact that we're talking about a private charitable organization dealing with adoption. But that number is dropping, and there's a reason. The reason is more and more laws now require organizations like Catholic Charities to make adoptions to same-sex couples, even to unmarried same-sex and different-sex couples. The law is requiring it. Catholic Charities is saying no, and in some cases, well, actually in many cases, simply getting out of the adoption business altogether. That can't be good. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. on this Thursday afternoon, the 9th of June. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking with Colleen Carol Campbell about that issue, a new civil union law in Illinois, Catholic Charities and Gay Adoption, and the legacy of Jack Kevorkian. After that, Carol Doherty will join us from the Pew Research Center to discuss a new Pew Forum poll on support for a Mormon presidential candidate. It raises a question that I want your answer to after that conversation is over. The last half hour of Issues Etc. on this Thursday afternoon is open lines for your answer to the question, would you vote for a Mormon presidential candidate? If so, why? If not, why not? I want to hear from you. 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. You can send your answer to that question to our studio via email, talkback@issuesetc.org. We get those emails in real time. Send us a tweet at @issuesetc or answer the question at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. Colleen Carol Campbell is host of a radio and television program called Faith and Culture. She's author of the book The New Faithful, and she writes a weekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Colleen, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
On the issue of gay adoption, is this the first time that public policy has made trouble for Catholic Charities?
No, and especially on this issue of same-sex unions and same-sex adoption. We've seen this in Boston. We saw it in San Francisco and more recently in Washington, D.C. This is, though, the first time this issue has come to the Midwest in such a pointed way, you know, posing a direct conflict for Catholic Charities in Illinois between their commitment to Catholic values about the sanctity of marriage and the sort of homes they ought to place children in who need adoption, and a law with a rather Orwellian name of the Religious Freedom Protection and Civil Union Act, which actually does a lot for gay civil unions and very little, as we're discovering, for religious freedom. And basically what's happening here is Catholic Charities is being targeted, and they've gone to court over it because they feel the new law, despite its name of protecting religious freedom, is actually targeting them by forcing them to place children with gay or unmarried couples, which is against their charter and their principles as a Catholic agency. So this has happened before, and unfortunately in the past cases, we've mostly seen Catholic Charities throw up their hands and have to get out of the adoption business altogether. In Boston, it was a real tragedy because it was the, I believe it was the state's oldest adoption agency, might have been the oldest in the nation, and primarily serving low-income kids, and now they could no longer do that good work because of the law there in Massachusetts. And that may be the fate of the Illinois Catholic Charities agencies as well.
What is sometimes mentioned is the degree to which really kind of the civil realm depends on organizations like Catholic Charities, private organizations, to do this kind of work.
That's right. It's not, for the most part, profitable work. Those agencies that do make a profit off of adoptions are generally not accessible to many Americans who can't afford to use those agencies. And often Catholic Charities is dealing with the kids who are not, you know, necessarily the designer babies everybody's clamoring after. And these are kids who desperately need homes. Catholic Charities does an excellent job with placing them, but it does have this principle of following Catholic teaching, because otherwise what's the point of being Catholic Charities? And, you know, just to be clear here, the policy is not simply that children don't go with gay couples, but they don't go with unmarried couples, period. That was the policy that has put them in the crosshairs of the Illinois government. You know, and all you need to do is look at 40 years of social science data to see why they have that policy. There's, of course, the biblical and the traditional reasons from a Christian point of view, but even strictly from a sociological point of view, there are very strong, almost unassailable arguments to be made for keeping kids in homes with married mothers and fathers. That's what, you know, really nurtures a child's development like no other family setup. So this is not an unreasonable policy to have, and frankly, people want to, you know, go to an agency that has different policies. There are plenty of them. So why pick on Catholic Charities?
Illinois Governor Pat Quinn is Roman Catholic. Do you think that's going to make a difference in the Illinois situation?
Well, I think he'll probably trot that out in his state's defense, and the Attorney General might try to throw that in the mix, at least for the media. You know, in practically speaking, it's made no difference whatsoever. In fact, the church came out very strongly against this civil union law, and Quinn specifically cited his Catholic faith when signing it. Didn't mention the fact that the side he was taking completely flouts a fundamental teaching of the Catholic Church, which is what is the purpose of marriage in the first place. And the definition, of course, is a man and a woman. You know, this is civil unions, but by giving gay couples all the same rights and the right to harass agencies like Catholic Charities when they don't kind of bless these gay civil unions, you're essentially creating a new definition of marriage. And that's absolutely contrary to the Catholic faith that Quinn professes. But unfortunately, like many Catholic politicians, he's a Catholic when it's convenient, and he doesn't follow church teaching when it's inconvenient or when it's simply something he doesn't find compelling.
So is that what we're seeing when he overturns the death penalty in the state of Illinois, citing his Catholic sensibilities, but then turns around and does something like this?
Yes, I think so. I mean, you know, I think it's admirable when he's looking to the church for some guidance on the death penalty, although if he wanted to look on the issue, for instance, of abortion, he'd find the teaching is much more unequivocal than it is on the death penalty. But, you know, in any case, great, so you're looking to your Catholic faith on the death penalty. But on these fundamental questions where there's a real culture war raging, those are the questions where Catholic politicians like Quinn are bowing out and saying, well, there I can't let my Catholic faith influence me, but over here I can because it happens to line up with my liberal political views. So it's a very much a cafeteria Catholicism, and, you know, it's very unfortunate that needy children are going to suffer, and married couples who have a right to have, you know, priority when it comes to adopting children are going to suffer across Illinois because, once again, we've got, an agenda, agenda-driven law backed by, you know, legislators who are not looking at the best interests of the children but rather are looking to the interests of a group that is very loud, and that is gay activists. And they're very loud. They put a lot of pressure on people to follow their agenda. And the kids are sort of the collateral damage in all of this.
Do you think that, at least in some areas, this is also an attempt to simply get Catholic Charities out of the adoption business altogether?
Yes, I do. And it's already worked, as we mentioned, in several other cities. And so I think that's absolutely part of the agenda. And, you know, leading prominent gay marriage activists have come out and said, you know, there is going to be a clash here between religious freedom and the right to same-sex marriage, and that's okay, and religious freedom needs to fall. So not everyone is even very coy. In Illinois, they obviously tried to wrap religious freedom around this Civil Union Act and sort of make it as if the two were not going to be in conflict. Obviously, they soon were in conflict. But in many places, same-sex marriage advocates are no longer even trying to make that claim. They're saying, yes, we are in the business of shutting down agencies that attempt to live by and operate by principles that we consider homophobic. Even if we have other alternatives for the same services, we want to find you and target you and shut you down and teach you a lesson. And everybody has to be on board with same-sex marriage and with this redefinition of marriage. And if you're not, we're going to send the law after you. In addition to our pickets and our boycotts and all the rest of the bullying that's been going on since Prop 8 passed in California and even before that. So this is very much a campaign of intimidation, and Christians of all stripes need to speak up, because it's not just Catholics and Catholic charities who are going to be picked on here. We're seeing this happening to Christians of all denominations all across the country, from private business owners to small social service agencies. It's a real danger, and the quieter we are now, the less of a voice we'll have later on when we want to actually speak up against these things.
So you think that part of the goal here is to send a message loud and clear. Catholic Charities is the big fish in the pond. If we can do this with Catholic Charities, the rest of you don't stand a chance.
That's exactly right, and it sends a strong message that you are a bigot if you believe marriage is between a man and a woman and that children do best when raised by their married mothers and fathers, and never mind the four decades of social science data that back you up. You're a bigot. And you're a bigot, and your views are going to become illegal, and your religion, essentially as practiced in any meaningful way, could eventually become illegal as well. So this is a fundamental religious freedom issue in this country, and that's what I think a lot of people don't understand about the same-sex marriage debate. It's not just a debate about the meaning of marriage. It's a debate about our freedom as religious citizens in a nation that's always been known for its tolerance of diverse viewpoints. And under the banner of tolerance, gay rights activists are quietly pushing religious actors off the public stage and shutting down groups like Catholic Charities. And a lot of people are going to suffer as a result.
Well, when we come back, we'll get Colleen Carol Campbell's thoughts on the legacy of Jack Kevorkian, Dr. Death. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. It's Thursday afternoon, June the 9th.
You'll find 130 Bible stories for young children in the Story Bible. It's the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for June. The Story Bible contains high-quality, realistic art, discussion questions, and prayers. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase the Story Bible by calling Concordia Publishing House at 1-800-325-3040. Christ-centered, cross-focused, the Story Bible, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month.
In 1968, Bob Edson perfected the sauce of his dreams. He called it Country Bob's All-Purpose Sauce because it tastes great on everything. Country Bob's also has a line of specialty sauces like All-Purpose Spicy, Honey Habanero, or Apple Chipotle, if you like it hot. You can find Country Bob's All-Purpose Sauce at your local grocery store or log on to CountryBob's.com and find out more, like a Country Bob's cookbook or recipes on their blog. No matter what you're grilling or cooking, it all comes down to the sauce. Country Bob's All-Purpose Sauce.
An umbilical cord of biblical truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? We've made it easy for you. Just go to the Listen On Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the Listen On Demand page and click Share This.
Thanks for sending us your email. Having produced Issues Etc. for more than 15 years, I can tell you that we've never received email response like this. Unfortunately, we simply can't reply to all of your email. So here's a way that I can almost guarantee a response to your question or comment. Call the Issues Etc. comment line. 618-223-8384. It's available for your questions or comments 24/7. 618-223-8384.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. Colleen Carroll Campbell is our guest. For the next few minutes of the program, we'll turn to the subject of the legacy of Jack Kevorkian. And then, after we conclude our conversation with Colleen, Carol Doherty of the Pew Forum, or the Pew Research Center for People in the Press, will join us. We're going to talk about a new Pew Forum poll on support for a Mormon presidential candidate. That leads to a question I want your answer to in about 10 minutes here on the program. Would you vote for a Mormon presidential candidate? If so, why? If not, why not? Open lines in 10 minutes here on Issues Etc. Colleen, much of the coverage of Jack Kevorkian's death has been eulogizing. The obituaries seem to say he's a guy who had the right idea, but he was a bit of a kook. So maybe his heart was in the right place. He just had a strange way of going about it. How do you read the coverage of Jack Kevorkian's death and legacy?
Right. Well, it totally belies the facts. This man, 83-year-old pathologist, when he died last week, he helped kill more than 130 people. He had this crusade for assisted suicide that, as you said, got a lot of glowing obituaries. There was a fawning HBO biopic about him a few years ago. A lot of really great press about, you know, hey, he's a little strange when he dresses as the Grim Reaper and euthanizes people in rusted-out vans in public parks, but he's a good man serving a good cause. The facts of Kevorkian are this. Number one, his Dr. Death nickname and all of his kind of macabre leanings and his strange associations, all of that which we were told, well, that's just part of the excess as he campaigned for this noble cause of assisted suicide. Actually, he's had a lifelong obsession with death. Back in the 50s and 60s, he was open about the fact that he would photograph the eyes of his patients while they died. He advocated openly for the vivisection of death row prisoners, operating on them while they're still alive, as they're dying. In fact, that particular article that he wrote advocating for that got him bumped out of his medical residency. The school didn't want, University of Michigan, I believe it was, didn't want anything to do with him. He wrote papers on conducting blood transfusions from corpses. So he always had this kind of ghoulish streak, and he just sort of finally found the cause that he could kind of direct all of that excess and dangerous eccentricity in when he stumbled on the euthanasia assisted suicide cause much later in his career. You know, his first person that he helped kill themselves was an early Alzheimer's patient in 1990. As I said, there were some 130 people after that. And again, there's this storyline we hear constantly, especially in the obituaries, that these were sad terminal cases, people who had only weeks or months to live, and he was merely ending their misery just a little bit early. But in fact, there have been two separate studies that showed that wasn't the case at all. In 97, the Detroit Free Press looked at all of his cases, and again, in 2000, the New England Journal of Medicine did an analysis of autopsy data on his so-called patients. The New England Journal found that only a quarter of his clients were terminally ill, only a quarter, and five of them had no physical illness at all. The Detroit Free Press had found similar conclusions, and they found that most of the people that he helped die were disabled, in many cases depressed, but most were not dying. I know one case that really stood out to me was that of Judith Curran. She was a 42-year-old unemployed nurse. She's a mother of two young children. I think they were 9 and 7 when she died. She had chronic fatigue syndrome and depression and had called the cops on her husband for beating her in the past. And he was there by her side when Kevorkian put her out of her misery, so to speak. So this is a woman who could have lived, who could have been with her children, who could have been given help for her depression and her troubled marriage, and instead was killed by Kevorkian, with, of course, her own consent. But how much you can really consent when you're in that state of mind in those circumstances, it's difficult to say. So this is not a man who helped the terminally ill out of a sense of compassion. It's someone with a lifelong obsession with death, a flagrant disregard for the value of human life. And in many ways, despite all of the protests to the contrary, he's actually the perfect symbol of this movement, of the Right to Die movement, because when you scratch the surface, it's not about compassion. It is about really saying that we don't want suffering, and the answer to the problem of human suffering is death. We don't want the suffering in our midst. We don't want to suffer. And we don't want to face the reality of that. We don't want to work on improving palliative care or respect for those who have disabilities. We just simply want to get these people out of the way. And, you know, it's the old, if I ever get that way, just shoot me. You know, as a culture, to embrace that as our mantra and to say this is a new right that we're going to define and we're going to follow in the footsteps of someone like Kevorkian in embracing that, it's just, it's chilling and it's a barbaric. And I think the celebration of him after his death is just really, it's appalling how far we have fallen in this area in just a few decades with, of course, his help.
Colleen Carol Campbell is host of a radio and television program called Faith and Culture. She's author of the book The New Faithful, and she writes a weekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. You can read Colleen Carol Campbell's columns at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Colleen, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Todd.